The following is a news and public affairs presentation of the WEKU stations. Thank you for joining us for coverage of the mayoral candidates debate sponsored by the Lexington Forum. I'm John Hingsbergen. This broadcast was recorded Thursday, May 1st at the Hillary Boone Center on the campus of the University of Kentucky. It features three candidates running for the office of mayor of Lexington who will appear on the ballot for the 2014 primary on May 20th. They are incumbent Jim Gray and challengers Danny Mayer and Anthony Beatty. The two top vote-getters in the primary will face each other on the November 4th ballot. The moderator for this debate is veteran broadcaster and journalist Tom Martin.
Prior to the start of the rounds, when we get into our questions, each candidate will be given 2 minutes for an opening statement. Each candidate, again starting with candidate number one and moving across, will be given up to 3 minutes to answer each of three questions that we have arrived at, the board of the Lexington Forum, by consensus. Once the candidates have finished answering the question, each candidate will then have a 30-second rebuttal available. In responding to each question, candidates are not required to use up all of the allotted time if they don't want to, and if the question's answer doesn't warrant it. Following that round, the three questions that we will pose, I'm going to open questioning to the floor. There'll be a floor mic right here for that purpose. We'll ask you to line up behind it. One request, please restrict these, limit these to questions only. No comment, no speeches. And I was thinking this morning, probably best to think about your question before you pose it. Frame it in such a way that everybody can answer it instead of making a candidate specific question so that we can keep this a balanced discussion and debate. Responses to each of these questions will be limited to 2 minutes, then a 30-second rebuttal if chosen. When our timer alerts me that we have hit 8:35, we'll end the questions from the floor, and then each candidate will be given an opportunity to give a 2-minute close. All right, we're going to begin with our three questions from the board of the Lexington Forum, and as I said, we'll move across this way with your responses. We should have opening statements first, beginning with Mayor.
Okay. Well, is this working? Yeah. All right. Well, first off, good morning to all of you. There we go. Tom, I'm going to start with three words, and by the time we get through, you all may be wore out with hearing me with these three words. But these three words have carried me for the last 3 years, and they'll carry us for the next 4 years. Those three words are getting things done. Now, just let me repeat that. Getting things done. Big things and small things and everything in between. Getting things done means tackling thorny problems. Now, many of you all are in businesses, in professions, and you know what that's like, problem solving. Getting up every morning and thinking, how are we going to improve today what we did yesterday? It's also about seizing opportunities. Now, I put my business experience to work in this job. We created a plan right out of the gate. Three goals: creating jobs, running government efficiently, and building a great American city, all built on the fabric and the platform of core values, just like we learned in my family, in a family business: safety first and quality of life, core values that support our three goals. Now, right out of the gate, 3 years ago, we had to tackle some thorny problems: $35 million budget deficit, a $20 million employee health insurance bust in the budget. We were spending $39 million, and we had a budget of $20 million. We had a pension that was underfunded by $300 million. So taking these good business practices into government is what the last 3 years have been all about.
Hey, can you all hear me, I guess? My name is Danny Mayer. I always commonly refer to myself as the other candidate in this race. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about who I am. I moved here in 2000 to get my PhD from the University of Kentucky. I received my PhD in 2007, and as I describe it, I really lucked into a tenure-track job at Bluegrass Community and Technical College. That's the place where I have been for the last 7 years. I'm married. My wife's, I think, over here somewhere, Julie. She's a nurse at the Toyota plant in Georgetown. We have a wonderful daughter, the Mayday Kid, whose birthday is today. She is 3 years old. Some of you may have heard of me in terms of the public as the publisher, editor, creator, writer, distributor, social media organizer for the community newspaper North of Center. In that position since 2009, from 2009 to September of 2013, I published 77 issues. My particular coverage was to look at downtown development, a lot of the things that Jim over here was talking about. In addition to that, I've got interests in watersheds. I'm a very big paddler. I'm a hiker. I'm a public transportation person. And so my platform, I'm calling it the Whole Horse Platform. Part of my coverage of the downtown area and the larger city really sort of focused, as far as I could tell, that a lot of the focus has been on horse country and on Main Street development. And unfortunately, that's not where most of us live. So what we've been doing is we've been over-investing in these areas, and we need to start reinvesting in other places of the city. So one of the things that I've really oriented my 10-point platform towards is what I think of as sort of a Green New Deal. One of the things nationally we've talked about is that our current president and previous presidents haven't been investing in infrastructure. So I think what you'll see from a mayoral candidacy for me will be focus on public busing, local food economies, and trying to create the live-work play spaces and to bring those out into our suburban economic development areas.
Good morning. I'm Anthony Beatty, and just to reintroduce myself to you, native Lexingtonian, born here in Lexington, a product of the segregated school system and then integrated school system. So I had the opportunity to watch Lexington grow from a sleepy little town of 40,000 or so to the booming city that it is today. I'm deeply honored and certainly honored to be here today with the opportunity to be the leader of Lexington. My wife Eunice and I have invested untold number of hours and resources in this community because we fully believe in this community. It's been good to us and to our family. We've raised our two boys here, and then our five grandkids are also here. So we treasure everything that Lexington is about. So the reason I'm in this is to make Lexington a better place for all the people, all the places, all the time. And I'm basing my platform on three things. Number one, proactive public safety. Number two, enhanced and better public services. And number three, fiscal responsibility and stewardship of the revenues and how we then manage our government to make Lexington the best place that it can be. And that's the reason I'm running for mayor.
Very good. We saved some time there. By the way, I want to thank Daryl Hofe for manning the clock. He's going to be very rigid on this to get us through, get as much in as we possibly can in the time that we have. Now, I have questions to pose. And our first question from the board is, and some of you have done this, but if you could put them in order of urgency, we'd appreciate it. Cite your top three or four policy priorities and then rank them in order of urgency in your view. Mayor?
Well, Tom, 3 years ago, we set three top goals. Create jobs, create the environment for good jobs, run government efficiently, and build a great American city. I've learned in the last 3 years that that order is exactly on point. By having good jobs, we create a community where people are engaged. Good jobs give purpose and meaning in life, and all of you know this. I'll bet some of you know friends, family, who lost their jobs in the recession. Everyone in the world today wants a good job. Let's think about that. Running government efficiently, right out of the gate, we had to deal with what amounted to a turnaround situation. We were spending more than we were taking in, living beyond our means. Many of you who have been in business know what that's all about. So these priorities have been the foundation, the very strength of taking us to the point where we are today. Today have more employed in Lexington, 150,000, than in Lexington's history. We have the lowest unemployment in the state, but we have much more to do. I burn with impatience. I admit that. I acknowledge that. Like many of you, we wake up every morning thinking, how can we improve today what we did yesterday?
I agree with what Jim's saying. I think we need to start creating better jobs. I think we've probably got a little disagreement in what kind of jobs that we value. I think nationally what's happened is that we have created a market where we have to have a college degree in order to be able to enter that job force. You know, 30 years ago you could get a high school degree and you could actually go make a living. And so I think that part of what we need to do is, in terms of Lexington, is to start thinking about how we can have, I always think of these as sort of low access, but also well-paying jobs. So, you know, for me, I think that requires a couple of things to happen. First of all, I think we need to stop or to extremely limit the severe subsidizing we've given to Main Street development. So if you look at CenterPoint is on tap for $40 million or something like that in TIF funds. The 21C development has been getting a variety of public subsidies that are coming out of low-income economic development strategies, some cases just a gift from the city that we've been giving money from. The Rupp Arena project is going to be something else that is also going to be weighing on our finances. So we need to limit the money that's going to those places, and we need to start thinking about how we can generate other types of jobs. Personally, I look at affordable housing as a way to create jobs. The Affordable Housing Trust Fund study have looked at a $4 million annual investment will create 350 jobs. Those are jobs that you can give to carpenters. People. I work at BCTC, so I know that the Technical College is a generator of a lot of these types of jobs and can be a place that you can really organize different types of jobs around. Local food clusters would be another thing. We've talked a lot over the last 4 years publicly about valuing local food. Here in Lexington, we have an ag industry. It's largely horse-based. I love horses, but I also don't have access to horses. And for the most part, the people who do have access to horses are by and large already doing okay in their particular checkbooks or their personal savings accounts.
My three priorities, as I stated a few minutes ago, are number one, enhance public safety. And I think for that, obviously I have proven leadership in that area. And I look at that as a priority for our community because we can talk about and do a lot of things for and in our community, but if our community is not safe, all those things can be for naught. So we got to focus in and make sure that everyone not only feels safe, but is safe in our community. And so there are proactive ways to do that. I want to go into those, but that's a number one priority for me. I have proven leadership in this area. I've studied the numbers and the facts, and I know those and certainly can change the tide. It pains me deeply that our city, on the lead stories for our friends in the media, is another robbery, another homicide, another theft, another burglary. And we need to change that tab before Lexington has or gains the notoriety of being a crime-infested city. It will take us down faster than anything, number one. Number two, I want to enhance our public services. That being all the things that make the infrastructure work in our city. That being the idea that our parks and our recreational facilities are not only accommodating, but attractive and enhanced and offer for young people and families to come and use them. So not just sitting there, not with the grass unmowed, but they're operating and they're open and people want to come there and use those facilities. It also means that we improve our traffic flow. There are many, many things that we can do if we look out at best practices across our country that can improve and enhance how traffic flows in our city. And that's an ongoing project for us in any city, but Lexington certainly has its needs and ills when we talk about enhancing that piece of our community. And all the other things that go along with it, like basic garbage services, all those things that we can do to enhance our community, public services need to be focused in on to make sure we do that and we operate at the optimum for our city. And last but certainly not least, being good stewards of the funds and the revenue that we have in our community. How those dollars come in, how we budget long-term for them and look at the fiscal year, and how we prorate and use those dollars out at the end of the fiscal year. I'll be a good steward of those dollars. The last thing I want to add, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody have a rebuttal? 30 seconds.
Yeah, Danny Mayer. I want to reinforce something that Anthony had stated. He talked about enabling parks, and I look at this as sort of a larger focus on suburban development. I think one of the things that Jim's done really well is he's talked really about these live-work play areas for downtown Lexington. And the way that I see it, again, I live downtown. I am a regular patron of Al's Bar on North Limestone. I also go to a number of their other establishments downtown. You know, what I see is that these places are successful because they're small areas, and we can take those and we can find other suburban areas that are also small. That'll require parks in addition to public services.
Anybody else? Nope. Okay. Next question. If the Lexington Convention Center closes for renovations, how would you, as mayor, act to protect downtown businesses and businesses in general against resulting losses? Beginning with you, Mayor.
Clearly, the Rupp Arena project is something that everybody's aware of today. And what we have in that project is an opportunity. We have today a 40-year-old business model. Now, Rupp means a lot to a lot of people. There's a real attachment to it. But it's long in the tooth. And that's true, too, of our convention center. So the plan that we've put together is solid, it's conservative, and it's detailed. We've learned a lot from Louisville. We've learned about some of its successes as well as its challenges. So this project, I'm taking, admittedly, a business career in construction, 850 projects. Every one of those projects got built. And what I know is that this is all about being competitive. This project is all about creating jobs. Just north of us in Columbus, Ohio, around Ohio State, the Nationwide District was created 12 years ago. Since that time, it has created 10,000 jobs in Columbus, generating more than $20 million for the city, which allow us to do the things that Mr. Beatty was talking about. Hire police, add to our services, our parks, our amenities, quality of life in our city. I've spent a business career in recruiting companies, first to Kentucky and then beyond our borders. I know about business recruiting. I know about jobs recruiting. This is a model that fits for us. Will there be some short-term pain in order to get long-term gain? Of course there will. That's what good management is all about. It's about dealing with the problems, working through them, but seizing the opportunities to allow us to grow and give people in our community opportunity. Thank you.
I'm probably going to say something that's not going to be too popular maybe in here. I'm not really quite sure that the convention center needs to be as expanded as it as the studies suggest it does. We are right next to Louisville and Cincinnati, which have very large convention centers already that we're having to compete with in our regional area. And I also think that Lexington is not located near an international airport, unlike Cincinnati and Louisville. So there's some headwinds there that I think that we have to be aware of and also try to work within our local context. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be valuing our convention centers, but we should place them, I think, in a fair context. Let me talk a little bit also about Rupp, the Rupp project as well that Jim alluded to. I've been a long critic of the Rupp Arena redevelopment, and a lot of that is because I've looked around at other places throughout the nation. Even conservative economists now don't look at arena development as anything that generates value for a community. If anything, it replaces pockets of money from suburban areas or from other commercial districts that get moved or replaced or displaced into those convention center or arena district areas. So just a couple of numbers for you. Yum Center, $250 million construction cost, $340 million in bonds, $573 million in debt paid back. This is before the downgrades. It's almost junk bond status now. The city of Louisville was supposed to pay $6.5 million as a maximum contribution.
They're now paying $9.8 million yearly. Cincinnati, right next to us, 1996, sales tax increase for Bengals and Reds stadiums. Anybody been there? There's not much development going around right on that waterfront. Hasn't increased nearby development. 16% of the county revenue now goes to service county bonds, and actually they had to sell a hospital to be able to help continue paying for these. He mentioned Columbus. When his task force was there looking at the actual report, they never mentioned that Columbus, at the time the task force was there, was having to have their arena actually taken over by the city because the people who owned it initially weren't able to make the payments. And that's actually also the case for Indianapolis as well, another place where the Rupp Arena Task Force Convention went to and delivered a report about. None of this was in the Rupp Task Force. And so I think what we need to do is we need to go back, revisit our discussions about Rupp, and actually have a real discussion about what do we want to put our money into. If we want to put our money into a convention center, that's great, but we can't have it all. We have to start making some decisions at some point, and those decisions should be informed.
Anthony Beatty.
The question was about the convention center proposal, and part of my platform is about fiscal responsibility. And we have to look at the amount of debt that our urban county government has, the debt service we have. We certainly have to look at the long-term impact on some of the services that Mr. Gray has mentioned. And I really think about our community and how can we do what we're proposing. If we talk about the convention center and how it impacts those folks in the short term and long term, it's significant. As the project, as I understand, is proposed, we stand the opportunity to lose convention business during this planning process and during the development of the facility itself. Certainly during that time period, there are folks who have established businesses there, small businesses that generate jobs. They depend on those for their well-being. And we're going to negatively impact them during this planning process and development process. So I think about to answer that question then, how do we best plan a project if we're moving toward a redeveloped Rupp Arena district? How do we best do that? And I think what we have not done and we should do is slow this process down just a bit, bring all the people to the table who are impacted in every fashion. That means the folks who are down at the convention center and us as citizens, so that everyone has a voice, has some input, and we can then collectively decide what's the best direction to go in for the project. The Rupp Arena project could go on, but there are many, many ways to do it different from what we're doing now. I really have to think about looking at, again, those best practices out there, and Danny Mayer has already mentioned those because we know some of the history of some of these projects in other communities. But I'm very concerned about the amount of time and energy we spend in developing this project, how much time and energy we spend talking about it when there are many, many other priorities in our community we also need to equally spend time for and address. So again, the project is going to negatively impact a lot of people. We've talked with those folks. We know how it will impact them, and it's impacting our community as we speak, not only from the amount of money we're talking about spending, but the amount of revenue we're losing now as we develop the project.
Thank you. Rebuttals?
Well, I'll tell y'all, I have learned in this job, if you have a deep need to be loved, don't run for mayor. The Rupp project is all about creating jobs and opportunity. It's all about seizing the opportunity, a milestone opportunity, almost a 50-year mark where a project needs to be addressed, a building needs to be addressed. I've learned that in the building business. When you're green, you grow. When you're ripe, you rot. Think about it. You know, if you're against progress, if you're against plans that are going to elevate a brand of a city, then how does that take you forward? There are people moving to our city every day looking for jobs or coming here because of good opportunities. The time. Oh, my goodness gracious. I was on a roll. We'll come back to it.
Anybody else?
I don't see that as forward thinking. I think that arena developments have been a loser and cities are starting to move away from that. So I don't look at that as forward thinking. I also think that the ways that our city leaders often talk about downtown development, it's about small development, it's about local development. And what we're really creating with Rupp Arena and the Convention Center area is something that doesn't, to use something that Graham Pohl often talks about, it's not scaled to our community. And to the degree that it's going to be something that's going to be very big and to be located in our city for next 30, 40, Jim's talked about 50 years, that might not be a forward-looking thing. That might actually be something that is looking back to the economies of the 1990s, not necessarily to a 21st century economy.
I don't oppose the Rupp Arena project. I oppose the process. I oppose the amount of funding it's going to take. I oppose the impact it has on the local citizens in terms of the tax dollars that they will have to spend. So progress is important. I certainly applaud that. We should be doing that. But I believe we should be more pragmatic about how we do it.
Okay, I'm going to skip the next question that we had designated. We actually came up with five. The candidates have actually answered this question. This is about economic development and priorities in that area. And go on to the next question that we had as an alternative, which is, what is the reality from your perspective of crime in Lexington? Under control, or do we have a growing problem? Beginning with the mayor.
You know, I've learned that if you've got crime in your neighborhood, then you don't want to hear the mayor say that Lexington's crime is down 7.8% year to year, or that Lexington compared to cities our size is 26%, crime is 26% below cities our size. Understand that, but those are the facts. So we have today, since I took office, we have had four recruit classes in police, 139 new officers on the street. When we went through the worst recession in history since the Great Depression, we had to make adjustments. We had to learn to live within our means. But we did not lay off anyone in fire and police. You know, like many of you, you learn that you got to pay your bills. In fact, if you can't pay your bills, if you don't have your financial house in order, you cannot hire police for the streets. So good fiscal management, good financial management, good business management, translating good business practices and principles into government has been exactly what I have done. That's what I promised I would do, and that's what I've done. And that's why Lexington is the place to be. Lexington is special. And yes, our foundational core value is safety, public safety, and quality of life. And maintaining that vigorously and looking across the full spectrum of management and leadership in our city is what's essential.
Danny Mayor.
So the question was about...
What's your perspective of crime in Lexington? Is it under control or do we have a growing problem?
All right, so I moved downtown and one of the things that people often said was, worry about crime, you need to worry about crime. I have personally felt very safe, although I think what I've seen from a number of police officers who have described the issue, they've talked about essentially sort of a ghettoization of crime, that these are becoming placed into particular sort of pockets. I tend to approach it through a process of gentrification, that crime is often a function of poverty and not having choices and feeling like you're largely contained and put off into certain parts of a community. You're locked up even if you're not locked up. Crime is also a function of underground black markets. People who don't have access to jobs are going to find other ways to be able to make money. So I think that part of this discussion about crime needs to really be talking about issues of poverty. And I think in Lexington, the rate is somewhere around 20%, give or take. It's something that's nationally higher than other cities, I think, our size. And so we should really address that. I think the second part of that is to actually look at trying to take some of our black market economies and bring them away from the black market. A lot of crime occurs because if you sell weed and somebody steals your weed, you can't go to a police officer. You have to take that initiative into your own hands. That sounds humorous, but that's actually literally what happened to to a recent murder here in Lexington, somebody who got dumped in the Kentucky River is actually in the front pages. I don't remember the person's name. They were selling weed, and they had a dispute, and they weren't able to deal with it. And so I think that a lot of these things happen in communities where you have to create your other ways to be able to make money, and so that contributes to those sorts of things. And we can go down the line with a lot of these things. Prostitution would be another black market economy. Immigration, if we have laws that don't allow our immigrants to be legal, then here again, they don't have any recourse to what we might call civil society. So part of what I would want to do is to really try to embrace, again, what I call the whole horse. Let's try to embrace all of our community and give more people access to jobs and to really being a part of our community. Beyond that, with the actual nuts and bolts of the law enforcement, actually, I'd like to hear what Anthony has to say. I think he'd probably have a lot more to say than I would on that.
Anthony Beatty.
Thank you, Danny. And you don't report to the police when your marijuana stolen either, so thank you. My perspective is, you know, we talked about progress a few minutes ago and things that are happening in our city. Let me say to you that we have regressed in this area. And I say that because as I followed the statistics when I was chief of police, I know 2004, 2007, we were one of the safest cities in the country, probably in the top four, perennially, because of some of the proactive things we were doing to work in and be a part of the community. And so I know and understand the crime numbers, and I do know and understand that about 3 years ago, the numbers, the way they were documented and reported to the FBI, the Part 1 crime stats, the way we report those were changed, so we can't really look at both. But we do know that you have a higher chance of being a victim of violent crime in Lexington than you did a few years ago. So we regressed in what we are doing in terms of making Lexington safe. So why has that happened? A couple of reasons. We've had a loss of police officers. When we left the agency back a few years ago, we were proposing to the council that we move toward 3.1 officers per 1,000 based on the FBI's recommendation for a city of our size and nature. We had moved the agency toward almost 600 officers. Today, that number has been reauthorized. There are fewer officers. Not just more police officers on the street, but more police officers who do those other proactive things. Work hand in hand with the community, building community trust, truly community-oriented policing. Also visible, working to prevent gang violence, working to understand an intelligence that leads you toward the heroin product as it becomes a subculture. All those things that are happening in our community have to be addressed in a proactive fashion, and you do that by staffing, facilitating, and training the number of people you need in the right way and giving them the latitude to do their job. If we don't do this, Lexington will stand and suffer the fate of many other cities. Again, I think it's very important to remember that the trust level, once it gets reduced, the numbers of crimes that get solved go up, and our community then becomes labeled as a crime-infested community. Just think about what's happening today, the types and nature of crime. We have 2 o'clock in the daytime, 2 guys with a sledgehammer walking to Sheller Bay's jewelry store, smash the glass, grab watches, and walk out. That would not have happened 7 years ago or 5 years ago. Officers would have been right in that area downtown on bicycles, on segways, interacting. Those folks would not have felt like they had the latitude to do that. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Nicholsville Road, Kroger's, a lady is stabbed in the neck, a random attack. And I'm not saying that these things can't happen, but there are ways to address and keep those kinds of activities from happening in our community. And I can tell you there are a lot of proactive ways to do that, and we have regressed in this matter.
Rebuttals. Mayor Gray.
Well, I'm not going to go into addressing scare tactics. What I'm going to do is say that this city has invested in public safety in the last 4 years more than $500 million. Today, our numbers tell the story. Down 7%, 7.8% over last year. One of the safest cities in America. 26% below average cities our size. Mr. Beatty talks about increasing the number of police. We are at the police level today, which our chief, our public safety commissioners have recommended. We are adding 15 additional this year.
Any other rebuttal? Dan?
A few years ago, the way we document and report the numbers of crimes have changed, so it's hard to look at both. I'm talking about the perception of crime and the reality of what we're seeing and the types and natures of crime. And I say to you that it is much, much worse, and it's going to get worse, not a scare tactic.
Okay, we're going to move to you. This is your opportunity to raise issues. And the way we're going to do this is place a mic over here. We'll ask you to come up and form a line if that's necessary. And again, please confine these to questions only, no comments or speeches, so that we can have as much time as possible to accommodate as many people as possible. Anybody have a question? Okay. Just one.
And how many can I ask? Can I just
ask? If you want to form a line up here, that's okay. One question, Tom.
I was going to ask, what is a great American city? But I'll come back to that. The question concerning public safety, one of the things that any of us that have studied the police or the public safety pension fund and the embedded costs of hiring new officers understand is that something like 75 to 80% of our budget goes to salaries and these related costs. Were it in the interest of our community to hire more people like this, would it be amenable to you, Chief Beatty, to consider seriously tackling the embedded costs in hiring a new police person? Included in that are long-term pension costs, disability, retirements due to disability that are 4 to 5 times the state and national averages, and some of those things that were bargained for under previous administrations that I consider, and if your campaign, one of the platforms is financial responsibility, this needs to be seriously addressed. I think the great Mayor Gray took a run at it, but it didn't get totally fixed. So you did take a run at it, right? That's the question part. Okay, that's it.
What is the question?
The question is,
would you consider a major overhaul of the police and fire pension and health care system?
And that's a question.
Substantial.
For all three candidates.
We start.
You're asking
first. We can begin. We can begin with Chief Bay.
Chief Bay.
I'm asking the mic or the chief.
Okay, but we're all three going to answer.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, for the question. If we look at changing the numbers of officers, we certainly have to do that within the scope of what we can fiscally manage. I'm not talking about an extraordinary number of officers, just what is the appropriate number given the level and types of crime and based on an average that we should have today. So answering that part of the question, we would approach that not just hiring a bunch of officers, but how many do we actually need to accomplish the job and make Lexington optimally safe? Number two, certainly we would look at any options we can to make sure that the pension that the public safety folks receive are within the scope of what's out there in the country. And we will look again at best practices. I know that we can bring people to the table. I know there are issues with discussing local control of certainly of the pension system, where that now it's all the mandates come from Frankfurt. And so answer to that question is we can look at both those, but I'm not talking about en masse hiring officers.
And a reminder, 2 minutes for these responses.
Jim, you addressed this early in your administration, right? Or you've attempted to? I'll let you answer later. I'm sorry. Yeah. I guess I'd say that, you know, one of the great things about police and firefighters, and really a lot of our city workers, is that they really represent sort of the old school type jobs. You know, I'm sort of a new school type in the sense that I'm overeducated and I've got a very small little area that I can go into, and I actually didn't enter the job force until 32 years old. I think with police force, a lot of times what you see people are coming in at the age of 22, 23, 24. And so consequently, I think what you end up with and what sort of my interest that I would like to look at are people who are retiring at the age of 50, 51, 52. Now, I've got friends of mine who are in fields that do a lot of damage on their bodies, and certainly the police force and the fire department are inflicting a lot of damage on their body dealing with various things that they have to do. What I would like to see is a way to be able to have some sort of a phased retirement that would be emphasized a little bit better, so that if police officers are taking disability or leaving early from the workforce, that we find other sort of desk jobs, community engagement jobs. Police enforcement's not just about enforcement, it's also about community interaction. And so I would like to place the discussions of pensions with how can we actually get more work that's not gonna be debilitating to our police and fire force in the future going after their sort of retirement.
And Mayor Gray.
Well, this goes back to those three words, getting things done. We had, when I entered office, a $300 million underfunded liability. Now that had accumulated over time by ignoring the problem. By ignoring the problem. And what we did was we fixed it. Now we brought everybody to the table. It was not easy to do that. Problem solving, and you all know this, is not easy. It's often tough. It's going against the grain. But we did that. And now we have a sustainable pension for fire and police, one that is able to allow us to continue to attract people to these jobs. But this is a lot more about than just policing. How much time have we got? Oh, thank you. A lot more about than just policing and enforcement. You all know this. This is about often changing a culture. It's about addressing issues in new and different ways. Ray Larson, our Commonwealth's attorney, district attorney, calls himself Ray the DA. You all know that. Ray Larson was here just a few minutes ago. He had to leave. But a few years ago, he brought to Lexington some folks with a model program called the High Point Model for addressing neighborhood crime. He brought a fellow who was an expert in this area, a specialist, and Ray was a real advocate. He's got a notebook on it. I have now pledged to work with him to institute this. Now, he brought it, and he introduced it to then-Chief Beatty, and the chief said, well, we don't need to do this. Well, these issues then accumulate over time. And what this project is all about is going and embedding itself in the community. And their focus then was going to be on Georgetown community, Georgetown, the Georgetown Street, which is exactly where we are working today. With Willis Polk, who is sitting right here. Willis is the pastor. Many of you know Willis, Imani Baptist. And Willis is a leader in the community. Last summer, you'll remember the marches against violence. How many were there, Willis? Seven. And Laura Hatfield working. Collaborating and taking then this model of community engagement into our city.
Okay, 30-second rebuttals will begin at this end of the table since that's how this round flowed. So, Chief Beatty, if you have a comment?
Just one comment. When Ray, the DA, brought the program to me as I was chief of police, we did not do that because we were effectively doing everything we needed to do in the Georgetown Street corridor. The Hope 7 project was coming. They were about to tear down the housing projects, and you see the development now if you go on the west end of our city. We had a very active, proactive group, the 4th Platoon, living there, working there, earned the trust of all the people. The High Point model was probably a regression from what we were doing at the time. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. Let's try to keep responses as brief as possible. Obviously, we've got quite a few questions and very little time. Next.
Thank you all for coming this morning. One of the missed opportunities from the Kentucky General Assembly this year was public-private partnerships. It passed overwhelmingly in the House and Senate. It got an amendment attached to it, which the governor said that was the reason he didn't like it and he vetoed it. I think it will be back again next year. Is that something you all would support? Would you all support P3?
Beginning with the mayor.
Short answer on that, did y'all hear the question? P3, public-private partnerships. The short answer on that is absolutely yes. The RUP project is an extraordinary example, really, of the public-private partnership. With the project today, as it is planned, more than 50% of the project's funding will come from private sources. That's where the University of Kentucky's almost $11 million annually toward the debt service will be coming from. And what is that? That's enhanced revenues through advertising inside the arena. As Jim Host says, who's the best in the business, Jim Host says, you know, Jim Gray, he says, talk about this not as the University of Kentucky's rent, but as their marketing, that their sales for enhanced benefits that are coming from a new and newly invented arena. So it's a great example of a public-private partnership right here in our city. We need to do more of that. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, a thriving city is going to engage the private sector vigorously. And taking those opportunities, seizing those opportunities, is what it's all about.
Danny Mayer?
I'd probably want to know a little bit more about the particular bill. My general sense is that just about all of our development of choice has really been public-private development. And the way that it's practically worked out in this city is that that public-private development has gone to, as I always call it, help the private development of the well-connected or the already connected class. So I'm all for public-private developments. I want to see that in new markets and for us to develop new markets. Jim talked about the UK as the private component of a public-private partnership. That's, to me, crazy. UK is a state institution. It's not a private part of the public-private initiative. So what I would do if I was to engage in public-private partnerships and if I were to look at University of Kentucky as a private entity, I wouldn't engage the UK Athletic Association. What I would start doing is engaging our educators, faculty, graduate students, staff. You know, these people have a ridiculously amount of knowledge and resources. We need to be subsidizing in a much smaller way a much greater amount of projects. And so when we throw all of our eggs into the Main Street basket for these public-private partnerships as they're developing, what we're really missing out on are a lot of other development practices. So yeah, I do like public-private partnership, but I want the private part to develop local food economies, agriturismos, suburban neighborhood developments, places like Bluegrass Bakery that are out Clay's Mill. These are the sort of private initiatives that I want to develop. And I think, honestly, you know, Jim's proposed, I think it's a $40 million city bond. You know, imagine if we, instead of taking $40 million for one project, if we were to take $20 million and to actually help engage and work with a number of other private businesses. One little sort of side issue with this that I see, you know, a lot of the development downtown has largely gone to a particular class of people. I'll talk about it later.
Anthony Mayer.
I'll support the concept of P3. It certainly works in the given situation. You know, I firmly believe that government should do what it does, and that's provide services, but also in the entrepreneurial spirit, the folks in the private sector that bring such knowledge and skills and ability to the table, then the blend is excellent for our communities as we look at how that model can work. And the most outstanding model of that is what's happening here now at the University of Kentucky with Dr. Capilouto's vision for our campus in terms of where we're going. And certainly the idea that we could not have moved the infrastructure, the renovation projects, the newer facilities, more contemporary buildings, a better environment for our students could not have happened without the infusion or the cooperation of the private side of our campus, of our community. So blending the two, working together, can work on many projects. And as the mayor said, Mayor Gray said, that you could do this and it does, could be a part of, and it is a part of the Rupp Arena project. So private, public-private partnerships, the P3 concept, I support.
Do we have any rebuttal?
The public-private partnerships. You know, here in Lexington, this is a 2002 study, looked at minority businesses. See if I can remember this from memory here. 7% of our businesses are minority-owned. Our city is 22% minority, or at least was in 2002. So you can see a big discrepancy for that. In addition to that, if you look at actual receipts, sales receipts, 1% of our sales receipts come from minority businesses. Now, if you go back and look at public-private partnerships, what kind of businesses and who are getting those public dollars?
Time. Okay, next question.
This question is all, for all three candidates. What are your plans to help Lexington cope with the burgeoning international crises of climate change, ecological degradation, and peak conventional energy production?
We'll begin on this end of the table, Mayor.
You want me to go first? Give you a couple.
Yeah, I've gotten first every time.
He's gone first all the time. So we'll, as I said, you can tell we're probably dressed similar. So there's a little bit of my wheelhouse here. You know, our defining issue is going to be global warming, and that's something that 98% of scientists now are saying. It's something that international governments are talking about. I haven't heard that discussed at all. And if you ask me, this is one of the big sort of failures, I think, of our larger community. We're here with a really, really smart, bright University of Kentucky institution, and we're not engaging this. We should be having our scholars engage this. Practical things that my platform's gonna do, I wanna revamp Lextran. Part of that's demographics. Our newer, younger demographics, they're not driving cars, they're taking buses, they're biking. So that's going to help there. You know, that's also going to help in our budget because it's going to be less wear and tear on our roads. Other things, I want to emphasize Lexington Greenways. Not only is that going to help make our neighborhoods, suburban neighborhoods, more valuable, but they're also going to decrease water runoff and increase our water quality. I think the third thing is one of the things that I want to do if elected mayor is to really mobilize our educational resources. I think a good example that's really come up quite a bit is RUP Arena, and this is another good example of global warming. I've never heard any discussion of the environmental costs of a mega arena. I've never heard anything about the environmental costs or looking in the future, 10 to 15 years, to see what is that effect going to be on the convention business. Are people going to fly in? Are they going to come across internationally and nationally to come to these places? So it's not just about our future, and I've got a 3-year-old daughter, so I feel bad looking at her and talking to her about the future, realizing that she's going to live in a vastly different world. But I think beyond that, just to those moral things, it's also about economics. It's also about city development. It's going to be also about things like public health and safety. And I don't see any of those things really being addressed currently by our city leaders' conversations or their development projects. I think the big picture, I think, is that what global warming has said is you should develop small, not big.
Mayor Gray, do you have a response?
A puzzle goes together one piece at a time. At the municipal level, we have opportunities, and we seize those opportunities. When I think of opportunities that we have to contribute to in our environment, I do think of our parks. I think of our bikeways, I think of our trails. We are today completing the Legacy Trail from the downtown into the Bluegrass. We have created trails like the Brighton East Trail. Anybody been on that trail? Wonderful tree canopy. It's really, really remarkable. It's used routinely and daily. Veterans Park, I don't know if any mountain bikers in this group, but that was an example of how, as a city, we came together. It was a project that was going to cost the city $250,000 to build. And so it was tabled, delayed. I had some people I know came to us and said, we think we can do this for $20,000. We've done it in Knoxville. We did that. So got a project that was going to cost $250,000, done for $20,000. Now, the one thing that we haven't talked about at all today is our consent decree, the EPA consent decree. It's a project that many of you know about, our storm sewers, big problem, issue that had been delayed for years. An estimate anywhere from over 10 to 12 years, anywhere from $400 million to $600 million. Now, I want to show you, for those of you who are in the construction business or the design business, Warren Rogers, I know you are, and you see what this is. This is the schedule of all the projects, 80 projects in our city. Looks pretty complicated, doesn't it? If you can look at it closely, lots of lines on it. This shows, though, this is something I deal with every week, meet with the project manager every week, and this is about getting things done for our city, which leads to a more environmentally sensitive and responsible city.
Anthony Beatty.
I know and understand that we in Lexington and Kentucky have the notoriety of having not a very good carbon footprint, and there are many factors that go into that. I certainly understand that we have to and must do a better job, and I think it starts at the grassroots level. It was mentioned here that the University of Kentucky has excellent people, not only the University of Kentucky, but our colleges and our educational systems and schools have the folks who can lead us in this area to make sure that we're doing the right things that don't negatively impact our environment. And so I think about what things we can do to help alleviate some of the problems. Mass transit has to be looked at. And I know and understand that we are a driving community. And when you have 285 square miles, if you live on the far perimeter of that, that part of the county, then you probably have to drive. But how do we enhance and work now to put in the infrastructure long-term for mass transit systems as Lexington grows and develops to help long-term to help with our carbon footprint? We need to be thinking that way now in terms of our vision of what the city looks like 20 to 30 years from now. The government facilities, the buildings that we build and own and operate, we being the government, should obviously meet the standards for LEEDs now. We should certainly do green buildings, green facilities, and make sure we can do everything in that area to reduce our carbon footprint. I know the University of Kentucky is working hard on fixing some of the infrastructure needs that they have to ensure that they don't negatively impact the carbon footprint and certainly our environment. So I think it starts early. It starts with me getting on my bicycle like Danny does here and ride with my grandkids, not only probably in the neighborhood for fun, but even more conveniently as we can use those types of travel and access as modes of transportation. We all individually and collectively then can have a positive impact on our carbon footprint and our environment. Thank you.
Okay, we're becoming very short on time. In the interest of trying to get in as the remaining questions, if you all will agree, let's dispense with the 30-second rebuttal and go forward. Next question.
Jim, you know what I'm going to ask. This question is for all three. Why can't Lexington be more closely connected to other surrounding counties in regional development and preservation of farmland and the equine industry?
Did y'all hear the question? Okay. You know, John, in this job, you get to know the mayors and the county judges and the elected officials in all of our counties. And I always love telling the story of what Ed Burtner says. Ed Burtner's the mayor of Winchester. Been mayor for a long time. Before that, he was city manager and head of public works. And Ed told me a story. He said, Jim, if you're in Winchester, the road from Lexington to Winchester is Winchester Road. But in Winchester, it's called Lexington Road. He said, it's the same way in Paris, Louis. It's the same way in Georgetown. Same way in Versailles, Harrodsburg. That's right. So what that tells us is, as Lexington goes in many respects, so go our neighbors. As we've talked, Frank, we've talked about the vigorous economy that we need to have in Lexington. Our friends share that. Our friends all over, elected officials in our communities around us, say that. As Lexington's economy goes, so goes our economy. So we are connecting. And these opportunities that we have to work together are very deliberate and very intentional. So I encourage it every step of the way. It's all a part of getting things done in our city, working together.
Danny Mayor?
I kind of look at it from a different perspective. Not everything from the outside is coming back in and focusing on Lexington, but what can Lexington do to sort of push out the development to go outside to other areas? Jim talked about Veterans Park. I think Veterans Park is a good little connector green space, actually, to Jessamine County. I actually took I'm a little weird. I took a nice little watershed walk. And I started at the Malone's on Tate's Creek Road. And I followed the watershed all the way to Veterans Park. Eventually, I started hitting up on a lot of greenways. Most of those were actually not developed. They were just being mowed, and they weren't being promoted at all. And where I ended up, where my wife picked me up, was at Brandon Crossing in Jessamine County. And what really connects us a lot of the time are our watersheds and a lot of these sort of agricultural areas. What I'd like to see are really some trails cutting through a lot of our agricultural spots. I would like to see a lot of our greenways connecting across to other counties. My sense is that we here in Lexington don't really know a lot about our other communities. We do know that Lexington is in the bluegrass, and we do know that there are a lot of horses around, but we're really not very interconnected with a lot of these other small communities. So what I'd like to see is a focus on agriturismo, so trying to create our a local food economy so that people can actually get out and experience their communities. You know, I would love to be able to go take a lunch in Paris and have lunch there, go to Versailles and have lunch, or to go visit these other areas. I need to be enticed to do that, right? Just like we talk about trying to entice our world-class visitors to come in and visit Lexington, we need to do a better job of enticing and mobilizing our local class of constituents to be able to go experience our communities. And we're not going to do that unless we're out and experiencing those in a lot of different ways. So again, my focus is on greenways. I would also probably see that it would be an expansion of LexTran as well to be able to get people without having to get into their cars to those places.
Anthony Beatty.
I think about the regionalism and the concept of regionalism in terms of how Lexington, being the hub of this region, can better work and collaborate with those communities that are contiguous to us. And I think about that because I don't think we do a very good job of that, so I appreciate the question. And I know historically we've talked about how we can enhance our relationship with those communities that surround us. And I think it's important now that Lexington starts to take a look out, see how we can work together with the folks rather than trying to just take care of Lexington and then suffer the fallout. And this has a long history. Certainly the merger back in 1973 or 4 gave us the opportunity as Lexington to become a regional hub. And probably historically, we've just not done a good job of nurturing the relationships with the folks who surround us. And so I think now is the time for us to take a look at how we can work better with those communities that surround us. Certainly, we've had the opportunity to work with nearly every one of the mayors outside of Lexington, with the exception of one or two as we speak. And I think about regionalism in terms of both economic development and opportunities. I watch with interest what's happening at our county lines. And you see it right at the county lines. We see the counties encroaching on Lexington and us maybe not reaching across to interact with them. So I think we need to talk about, with those counties that connect to us, how we all can work better to collectively put ourselves in a better position for the whole region to develop economically. So I really think that it's an opportunity for Lexington to be the leader, and then collectively we have a stronger voice when we go to Frankfurt or to the U.S. government or wherever it is to help us with projects and initiatives that create development, then we have a better opportunity for working hand in hand with those folks. I think we have to work harder with our regional partners.
Time is really working against us. Would you all be comfortable with expanding this just a little bit so we can accommodate these last two questions, and maybe we can confine the responses to 1 minute because we also have closing statements to come up. Okay with everybody? All right, Sandy Cannon.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for being here. My perception of a mayor is that you're part cheerleader. And my specific question is, how do you use that bully pulpit to grow specifically? How do we grow our local businesses and attract new businesses to our community?
Mayor Gray.
Yeah, I like that language there, Sandy. I sometimes say, yeah, part of this job is chief cheerleader and carnival barker for your city. I believe actually that, you know, if we're doing our job, then we're going to make people feel better about themselves when they get up in the morning because they feel better about their city. That's a very big deal. You know, because, you know, lots of times that's a struggle. That's a real struggle. So having, feeling better about our city by getting things done is a very big part of this. Now, what does that mean in attracting businesses? I can tell you that when the Bingham McCutcheon firm came to town, we were competing with Des Moines and with Kansas City. And what Tracy Whitley said when she said, I asked her, what was it, Tracy, that made you all decide on bringing 300, almost 300 jobs here? She said, Jim, I can pull it down into one word, optimism. And that's a good time to call time.
Annie Mayer, 1 minute.
Wonderful. You know, my background is education, so I tend to take a little bit more of an analytical push. I think Jim's done a wonderful job, actually, of increasing optimism, particularly downtown. I see it when I walk down and talk to people around town. I think part of that also is just that nationally, everybody wants to move back to the city. So, you know, there is just happens to be an urban optimism. But, you know, I'm an academic, and I also think it's important to be rigorous and to recognize not just what we're doing well, but also what we need to improve upon. And so I think what you would see probably for me with my bully pulpit is really a little bit more of addressing larger community issues like poverty, job creation, and the focus that I would have on job creation is not really to worry so much about trying to incentivize outside businesses coming in, but to recognize that what Lexington has is a really wealth of international people already coming here because we already have the University of Kentucky that's been here for over 100 years. And so what I would do in terms of job creation is not necessarily to look outside, but to look inside. If we do what we do well here, then other people are going to want to move to this city.
Anthony Beatty?
Speaking of looking inside, I think one of the things we really need to do to enhance our opportunities created for work, job development is the idea of workforce development. So as Danny just said, if we want folks to create businesses, then let's look inside. What are we as a government doing to get people ready, to be ready should someone want to move their business here or to be a part of Lexington? Do we have the workforce, the types of skills that are needed to accomplish those jobs should they come here? So everything that we can do as a government would encourage that. That means working with the businesses, collaborating with the educational systems, and the schools to make sure that we develop the right types of folks to do the skills when companies like Bingham wants to move to Lexington. The other thing I think we should do is make sure that the government fully supports the opportunities that we can create to make the opportunities for businesses to come here. And locally, we want to make sure that we encourage the businesses or the folks who might want to create businesses here in Lexington to certainly use their entrepreneurial spirit to do just that. Thank you.
Final question.
Good morning. When you look at the city of Lexington, it's the shopping, entertainment, and cultural hub, not only for our satellite cities that directly surround us, but going about 2 hours east. But we rarely get those people downtown unless there's a game at Rupp Arena or a football game. And with a second mall coming up on Nicholasville Road, what ideas do you have that's going to drive some of that out-of-town economy and revenue downtown to support our more local businesses?
Very great.
Well, okay, y'all all got that question, right? All right. The urban centers, actually, Danny said that a minute ago. The urban centers in America today are thriving. And so putting energy intentionally and deliberately into that is what we ought to be doing, seizing the moment. In terms of the Rupp project, you know, what we have to remember is it's not just about the arena, although the arena is central to it and the convention center. But it's about using the 46 acres like Columbus did to create jobs and opportunity. So that would include retail, that would include arts and entertainment, but also the technology businesses that are aligned with the university, which is a 7-minute walk away from the High Street parking lot, an empty parking lot of 20 acres. So that's all a big deal. And it represents a game changer opportunity for us. I was on the job site at Toyota 30 years ago, building part of that plant. That was a game changer when Martha Lane Collins brought Toyota to Kentucky. $800 million project, brought jobs. In the center of our city, the transformation of Rupp into the district can be a game changer as well. A challenge, but an opportunity.
Danny Mayer.
You know, I'm happy that anybody comes from out of town and spends money anywhere in Fayette County. And I don't necessarily see Main Street businesses as being strictly local businesses. You know, I think that what's happened is that as we've over-subsidized Main Street, the rents for those areas have become too exorbitant for local businesses really to be able to inhabit and live there. So part of what I see happening in my walks and bus trips and hikes and all those other things around Lexington is that really in terms of commercial innovations, those sort of small local shops, that innovation is not in the city center. That innovation is actually out in the suburbs. Or it's off of downtown enough blocks that I wouldn't really consider it part of that Main Street development area. So Al's Bar, my favorite go-to place, is a local development area, a local business, but it's not located on Main Street. People don't need to go downtown to get to those places. I'd like to go out to places like Beaumont Center and look at Sahara as a a wonderful restaurant. Look at the ethnic grocery stores that are around. That's the place I want to send people to.
Anthony Beatty.
I think this refers back to the last question about regionalism and how we work together. If we think about this, cities like Lexington become metropolitan areas eventually. None of us in this room will probably live long enough to see that, but that's the reality. And so with that in mind, what are we doing now to work with those communities that surround us to bring in entertainment, not only from them, but from them through the people that they know and connect to? And then what types of entertainment venues and opportunities do we create here in Lexington? Again, on a regional concept. And that has to happen. We have to work with the outside folks and find out what is best for the region, not just Lexington. I'm going to say this, and this has to be said, but our world is changing as we speak. We're more diversified now than we probably ever will be. It'll probably keep happening. And so we have to diversify the types of entertainment that we bring to Lexington and the surrounding area, and the way that we encourage people to come to Lexington. And I learned this firsthand as we tried to bring one convention to Lexington, a group of minorities, how difficult it was to ask them to come because of the perception. So we've got to have things that attract people who are different from us.
Okay, we're going to move to closing statements now. Each candidate will be afforded 2 minutes. We'll begin with Mayor Gray.
Well, thanks, Tom, and thanks all you all for being here this morning bright and early. 4 years ago, when I ran for mayor, I promised Lexington a fresh start. And with your help, with the help of a lot of people in our city, that's what we got, a fresh start. We are getting things done. Now, right out of the gate, there were challenges. $35 million shortfall, $20 million bust in health insurance, and a real challenge in our pensions. We closed those budget gaps. We brought council members and others together. Some of those council members are here today to work on these problems. I put my business experience to work, creating transformative projects all across the city. And we haven't talked much about that today, but how many of you all know out Richmond Road there was an apartment complex, a big one, called Pennington Place? Decaying, inviting crime. We recruited the skill sets of developers, the right developers, to come in and take that project and renovate it. Today, it is being rented on Codell Drive, otherwise poisoning a neighborhood, decaying neighborhoods. The same model at Sonnet Cove over on Lake Tower. The same model. Together, almost 600 units. Now, that's what fighting crime can be about, too. We need to remember that this is more than one-dimensional. Now, I'm also putting that business experience together, to work, on Rupp Arena, to create jobs and opportunities for our city, to elevate the brand that is here, that we own, that we should be working on, because we have that opportunity to bring all the talent together, the people, the interests, and the funding, to create something great and inspired for our city. Now, in closing, I ask for your support to help us keep getting things done and to keep making Lexington better. Thank you all.
Danny Mayer.
Not too long after Jim got into office, there was the infamous Angelou Report, Economic Development Report, which was released. Part of it was cut and pasted from a number of other different economic development reports they did in other cities. Jim actually was one of the people who, I think, led the charge to have them give back the money that Lexington had invested in that report. I wrote something for North of Center for that, and one of the things that I noticed was that when Angelou rewrote the report, they didn't really change much. They changed a couple of details, but that was about it. And what they gave us is a report that I've heard probably 10, 20, 30, 400 times here in Lexington, which is that Lexington has a pretty downtown. We do bourbon, We do basketball, and we do horses, and we need to preserve our farmland. Unfortunately, we don't live downtown, which has been losing population for the last decade, and we don't live in horse country. Where we live is in the suburbs, and it's the one thing that Lexington has actually done well over 30 to 40 years, has been to create suburbs. So I don't think it's been intentional, but I feel like part of our focus over the last 5 or 6 or 7 years has been on places where we don't live, and it's done that by devaluing the very places we do live. Right, so we shouldn't like our suburbs. It's not a good aesthetic. Suburbs are bad for our carbon footprint. I think it's what it's doing is it's creating a context where we're supposed to actually hate the places where we actually live and move and go to those places like downtown and horse country where we're supposed to invest our money. What I want to do is to recognize that what Lexington does well is suburbs. It doesn't mean that they're perfect. It doesn't mean that they need to be. They're perfect as they are. They can be retrofitted. One of the things that I've noticed is that when I'm in neighborhoods and talking to people, what they say is, yeah, we're glad we don't have cars coming through here, but we sure wish we had bike access. We sure wish we had access to a place to go get something, a beer or something to eat or a hardware store, right? We need to be able to invest in those places.
Anthony Beatty.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks to the Lexington Forum for hosting this event. Thanks to each and every one of you for taking time out of your busy schedules for being here. I'm running to be the mayor of Lexington because, very simply, I care. Born and raised, grew up in the community, been a part of this community all of my life, know and understand the community, have worked with many, many groups and been a part of that. And so the reason that we're doing this is we feel like there should be some things we're doing differently in Lexington. And I want to be the person who leads us into the next few years. I'm very, very proud of Lexington, who we are, what we are, where we've been, and where we're going. And so I certainly want to be a part of that as we move forward. I want Lexington to be about families. I want Lexington to be about fun. I want Lexington to be about opportunities for each and every one who's represented in our community. I want to encourage partnerships. And I want to take this opportunity to recognize the folks who work behind the scene to make Lexington what it is, that being those employees we've talked a lot about up here. Not just public safety, but all the employees who work behind the scenes daily to make Lexington what it is, and thank them for what they do. I go back to what I said earlier. I want public safety to be maximized. I want public services to be enhanced. And I certainly want to be good stewards of the funds that our government has, so fiscal responsibility is important. I want to be the Lexington mayor of all of Lexington. And in our conversations around the community, we found out that folks felt like they were left out, not at the table, and not a part of what was going on. I want all of Lexington at the table when we make decisions about where Lexington may be going. All of Lexington, all of its people, all of the time. Thank you, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you all. Thank you all for coming. I think we all leave here today with a better understanding of our options come November. And prior to the November election, we will be doing this again. We'll let you know about that. With that, I guess we're done. Thank you so much.
This mayoral candidates debate was sponsored by the Lexington Forum and was recorded Thursday, May 1st at the Hillary Boone Center on the campus of the University of Kentucky. The two top vote-getters in the primary on May 20th will face each other on the November 4th ballot, the winner of which will become the mayor of Lexington. The moderator for this debate was veteran broadcaster and journalist Tom Martin. I'm John Hingsbergen. You can find this entire broadcast online at weku.fm for online listening or for download as a podcast. That web address again, weku.fm. We now join our regularly scheduled program, Kentucky Center Stage, on 88.9 WEKU Richmond Lexington, 90.9 WEKH Hazard, 88.5 WEKF Corbin, and 90.1 WEKP Pineville.